Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and joining me this evening is indeed the one, the only, the actual living and breathing.
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Yes, folks, Chad Mitz has returned to join us once again, which means that you're not stuck with me rambling for 30 minutes incoherently on my own. So, Chad, before we get to our Blue Book segment, in which you hold me accountable for my absolutely god-awful, horrible Oscar predictions, because silly me had the fantasy land of Oppenheimer not destroying everyone in its wake. We have reached a point in time in which Marvel's just going to do the safe. We're just going to do the safe. We're not going to do all those fancy, like, edgy movies. We're just going to do the safe. Your thoughts, sir, on the news that conspicuously leaked right after Captain Marvel 3 had been trending as number one thing on Disney Plus in the last 3 weeks.
So when I initially heard it, I was disappointed. Not necessarily, but because it was tied to like them not doing Eternals 2. Not necessarily disappointed because it meant no Eternals 2, but it meant that as I saw someone put it, if they had played it safe after Iron Man 1, then or in Phase 1, we wouldn't be where we are
There
today.
would I saw that tweet. The tweet was Marvel had taken the safe route in phase one, there would not have been a phase three.
And I very much agree with that. And then I saw something that made me kind of change my mind in the fact that right now Disney's leadership, particularly Bob Iger, is in the middle of a proxy war for board seats from other chairmen, from other stakeholders. Most important to this discussion will be Ike Perlmutter. They're trying to gain board seats to gain control of the company in that business kind of sense. So
Where have we heard the story of a man being dethroned and taken out of power, only to buy his way back onto a board and regain said power?
that is very much what happened in the world of wrestling, but the difference is that crazy old man had all of the voting power. He rigged the game where he had all of the voting power. This is not that.
The
Bob
point
was
where
like,
his daughter and son-in-law could not stop him.
yeah, nobody could stop him. There was no one that had enough shares to stop him. So he could only leave of his own volition. He could only stay gone as long as he wanted to stay gone. And he'd come back whenever he wanted. And everybody knew it. And he did. And they're paying for that now. But this is more.
Brock is also paying for that now.
Well, I'm not gonna veer off on Rocky and what he's doing, but this is more. If they have the majority of the board seats, that means they have the votes and they can kind of do what they want. That's what Iger's trying to stave off. So this person is like, say whatever you want. Iger is only going to say the most militant stuff right now just to get through this. So it could be true, it could not. It could be not. It could just be Bob saying enough stuff to say we're steady and we're going to stay steady just to get through this. And once this is over, it could turn out to be, yeah, I was just, I was doing what I had to do. Marvel's doing what they want to do. That does not mean they're not taking risks. So basically, all that to say, I don't know if we're in a position to really trust Bob Iger when he's saying things that sound to make it sound like the company is on the most safest and solidest ground as possible. So it very well could be true. I'm not gonna say that it's not. But this could just be a move by the Disney higher ups to survive this this I know it's not a corporate takeover, but for lack of a
It's
better
corporate
term,
coup.
yeah, it's just that, and that probably is that. There's probably a little truth in it both ways, but I wouldn't read anything into it. I'm not reading anything else into it right now until all of that is settled.
Well, okay, so here was my reading of it, and I didn't have the proxy war piece of it, although it makes sense considering Iger, that big piece we got, what, almost 6 months ago or whenever it was, about the real story of how he treated his handpicked successor and how he very quickly realized Mr. Chipwick was not the right dude for the job, and then slowly started outmaneuvering him so he could take his old job back and try again with picking a successor. Like, the whole thing could have been a movie in and of itself. My thought on that was basically, without that piece of it, was I thought of Marvel, I thought of Disney as kind of a land, old school land baron. I've seen Killers of the Flower Moon more than once or twice now. And the idea of, I have this idea to execute this vision, to gain this wealth, and I'm gonna have to do some really shady stuff to get there, but I'm gonna do it because in the end, when everything's said and done, I'm gonna be the one last one standing, and I'll have all the oil. Disney has, if you want to, how do I like make this work? Disney bought up a bunch of oil wells that were productive oil wells that were producing at a good rate, and got them early on in their pipeline, where they were still of great value and were still producing high revenue batches of high barrels per day in terms of oil. They did that, and then they started cranking up the production to the point where those oil rigs were no longer producing the same quality of oil, but they were producing more of it. And now they're in a situation where they got so comfortable off the money that these oil wells were making them, that now that those oil wells are devalued and are making less money, still really good money, but still less money in terms of revenue per capita, per well, they are now going crazy because now they've gotten so comfortable and so used to that high revenue that medium revenue isn't even sufficient. And so they're now trying to up production again to try and push those oil wells one more time to try and hit that next batch so that they can go back to making, high revenue. And some of those wells have run dry. See Indiana Jones, see Star Wars. Like you tap those to the point where like they're very, very low in terms of your barrels per well. Marvel has been consistently providing you with oil and consistently bringing in good revenue for you. It just has not been that $1 billion revenue, that $1 billion a movie revenue that you were getting from them previously. And now you've already burned up all of the Pixar revenue, all of the Pixar well. You've burned up all of the Lucasfilm well. You've burned up all the ESPN well. You've burned up all the ABC News well. And your theme park well is very close to drying up because of your own political decisions and malfeasance. And your home video market is also gone. So now the only well that is functional enough for you to draw enough money for you to survive, you're placing everything on it to help you continue to survive as a functioning oil company. And that's where we're at now. That last well is Marvel. Marvel has been providing them with ample revenue, not mega revenue. They're trying to get back to mega revenue, and they feel like going safe by like doing brand names, that they've made brand names like, Iron Man or Thor or Fantastic Four or X-Men or whatever, is going to bring them guaranteed money. And it may not turn out that way. They may have gone run that well dry too. And we'll find out. But it just goes to the extreme capitalism of getting so used to mega profits that medium profits are a reason for concern.
Yeah, viewing medium profits as a failure is going to be. I don't think it's just Disney that has to get used to that. I think it's really Marvel just judging off of Marvel hit like that plateau we've talked about before in like 2018, 2019, maybe a little 2017, where everything was hitting a billion. That was never sustainable. There was never a world where that was going to be sustainable. So again, if you can't adjust your expectations, but the nature of capitalism is, once you get to the top, you keep going. You keep finding ways to keep exceeding that. But that's not how things work anywhere else. There's always going to be a come down effect. There, even in business, there is a come down effect. But normally when that happens, even though it should be natural in the capitalistic nature of things, that's when they start freaking out and destroying things instead of realizing, we should be here. If we get above here, that's fine. But as long as we stay here, we're cool. So
Well, I mean, at least Iger isn't doing the Zaslav and just burning all of his oil wells in one massive midnight fire. I mean, like, they've allowed slowly but surely, they bought up extra land. They bought up extra wells when they had excess money. They bought up Pixar. They bought up ESPN. They bought up Marvel. They bought up Lucasfilm. Like, they bought up 20th Century Fox. They bought a massive amount of oil wells to boom their profits. And now that those oil wells are starting to go dry, you're starting to panic for better oil, for more wells. And there may not be more wells to hit. And then if there are no more wells to hit, then you are the land baron, you own all the land, but it's useless land. There's no more oil on it.
I mean, in your analogy, you're going to run out of oil. That's just a thing that happened. I don't think their individual stakes are dry. I don't think they can run dry. I think they can have lows, and how long the lows last depends on how you react to things.
Like, for example, like ESPN in its heyday was pumping you out 250 million barrels of oil a year. And now it's only pumping you out like 50 million barrels a year. And so that's a dramatic reduction. Doesn't mean that they're not producing any barrels per day. It's just that they're providing significantly less oil revenues for you due to low staffing, due to rig issues due to any number of things that complicate the process of refining, digging and refining the oil. But they still are pumping out 50 barrels a day, but just they aren't at that $250 million a year month clip or day clip.
So, of their properties, ESPN is a different case because they are, again, they're not hitting that high, but they're also going to progressively keep losing because most of ESPN's revenue came from the fact because it came because of cable. And as more and more people are cutting cords, that is what's driving the decline in ESPN. So it's different than a lot of the other things. They're going to have to do some different things with ESPN. Granted, part of the reason people are cutting cable more and more now has been exacerbated by them pushing to streaming, and we're going to end up right back into cable by a different name at some point. But until that happens, ESPN is going to be steadily declining until they figure something out.
Right, but ESPN is also responsible for paying the NCAA a shit ton of money for the college football playoff rights, and a shit ton of money to the NFL for the NFL rights, and a shit ton of money to the NBA for NBA rights. And in turn, those league sports leagues take that money and use that money to run themselves. Well, if ESPN's no longer giving the NBA, $250 million over the course of 5 years for their television rights, because they can't afford it, well, now the NBA isn't making as much revenue. And so it's a trickle-down effect.
Yeah, it's complicated because they have to give out all that money because in the dwindling TV business, the thing that is king right now is live television, basically live unscripted television. So sports is ruling the day because it's
That's the
live.
reason why Netflix will pay so much for Vince, for
Right,
WWE.
that's why wrestling is valuable right now. Anything in that vein is. So yeah, they're going to be paying out the ass for these things, but they're what's driving their business. But that's ESPN. For like Marvel and Star Wars, Iger's in a spot where he has, and I don't think he's like full blown done this, but he can point and say, the way that dude handled the pandemic is the reason why we're in the place we are now, which is kind of true, because all of the decisions that were made at the beginning of the pandemic, they're paying for them now. They wanted to push streaming, and because they pushed their streaming service, they want to push the content they were getting. So they got their biggest studios to make a whole lot of content really fast, more than they could handle. And now you're seeing the results of that, particularly on Marvel. I think the struggles Marvel has had in the last year has been because they have been that structure has been overworked and produced so much content that it.
The gears on the oil rig have been blown apart and are now operating at such a reduced capacity because we got to repair the rig so it
Right.
can be at producing at full capacity. Because you can't ask a rig that has been producing, 100 barrels of oil per day to all of a sudden produce 300 barrels of oil per day to satisfy your need. Because then, like, especially in Marvel's case, Secret Invasion suffered from a lot of different things, but one of the biggest things it suffered from was VFX. And we have heard horror stories for at least the last 5 years about what it's like to be a VFX contractor for Marvel. And you add on top the compressed timetable and the demands on that for four movies and four TV shows a year.
Right. And Secret Invasion is a good one because I didn't find this out until after the fact, but initially it was conceived of as Captain Marvel, Secret Invasion. It would have incorporated, Captain Marvel would have incorporated elements of what that show became into the movie. And if they had more time, maybe they would have stuck with that idea and incorporated whatever they were doing with the Marvels into that and come out with a better story, because Secret Invasion's biggest flaws were VFX and its story. Both of those things are suffering because of time. So I think right now, the best thing that's happened for Marvel is that they've had to push everything back. They only have one movie coming out next year.
This year.
Well, this year, I keep forgetting what year we're in. There's supposed to be four next year, but I cannot see
I
us
don't
having
see how you
four.
get to I don't see how you get to Thunderbolts.
Well, Thunderbolts allegedly is shooting now. The one I don't think we get is for sure, I don't think we get Blade. We're getting Captain America for sure. I'm pretty
And
sure we're getting Fantastic Four.
so how many more times are we gonna see Marciano Ali before he's like, you know what? Really wanted to do this. It was high on my bucket list. You guys didn't make it a priority. Peace out.
Well, I think next year is the year. This Because not just because of that, but I mean, he's older. He's pushing 50, if not already 50 now.
The movie was announced at Comic-Con 2019.
Was it 19 or, yeah, it was 19.
It was the Comic-Con directly after Endgame.
So that's been 5 years. So if we're lucky, we'll get it in
26.
26, and yeah, so it'd be
And the
what
last time it was referenced, the last time he or any part of that was referenced was the post-credit scene to the Eternals, which now no longer matters because we'll never see any of those people ever again.
I think if they can't get it into production by the end of this year, going into next year, then that's probably done. But either way, I do not think we see Blade next year. So I think we'll see three. I think they'll all be spaced out because Cap comes out in February. Fantastic Four is like, well, no, Thunderbolts is in May, and Fantastic Four is supposed to be July because it's supposed to come out around Superman. I think with Blade going, I think Fantastic Four comes out in November.
Yeah, that was their original when they went to moving to move to three movies a year in 2016. The release window was February, May, November. That was always kind of their corridor, to release movies. So.
Right. So, but now they have the time to develop these things. They've been taking the time to develop these things. They've slowed down on the shows. I think we're only getting, we're
The only one I know of that's currently in development is Daredevil Born Again.
Yeah, that I think that's the only one actively shooting. Ironheart shot, but it's not coming out this year. Agatha is coming out this year. I think that's the only live action one that's coming out this year.
Besides
So
Echo and What If Season 3.
yeah, so yeah, we already had Echo. I forget. I thought that can't remember if that was the end of last year, beginning of this year. But you're not getting as many shows. You're not getting as many movies. Everything is spaced out. Yeah,
Right,
you
and
might.
let's just call a spade a spade. And let's just call a spade a spade. Daredevil's gonna make $1 billion. Like, Daredevil is gonna do huge numbers, and everybody's gonna feel good about comic book movies again. The question is how you follow that up when you don't have another movie, and your competition has a bunch of crappy movies coming out in Sony. You know, Sony had what, three scheduled for this year? Last
We
Dance, Madame Web, and Kraven.
Craven, yeah. So Venom, it can be whatever it wants to be. People seem to like those movies. That's fine. Craven is the one, but I mean, if it's like Madam,
If it gets a Madame Web reception, it's DOA.
yeah. And at that point, your best hope is that people don't associate it enough with your brand to keep going. And Madam Web is such an afterthought. I don't think anybody's thinking of it in the terms of
Don't
this
know
is a
anybody
Marvel
who's
movie.
seen it.
I don't either. I refuse to when it comes out on streaming, maybe. But to that point, after Venom, there's nothing until you get to Cap, and Sony doesn't have anything else coming out. I think you're going to clear. I mean, this year is like clearing the deck, and then next year we can really see what everybody's working with. And when I say everybody, I mean pretty much me, Marvel and DC, because they're really restarting things in 2026. So the last comic book movies come out in October of this year, and then from October you got from October to February with nothing, and then February then you we see. What it is. We'll see if people that are claiming that comic book movies are dead, we'll see if that's what happens in 2026. I don't think. I think we'll have enough of a reprieve from this year because Madame Web is not going to register anything. Kraven is not going to register anything. So effectively, your comic book movies for this year are Deadpool, Venom, and damn it, Joker. Those are your three.
And Joker, I don't really, yes, I call it, yes, it is comic book characters, but they're not being handled in a comic book way. Like
No,
they're
they're
not
not.
being handled, they're not being handled in the Marvel DC way. They're being handled in the awards way.
Yeah, they are. But for the people, but for some people that matter, for that count, they count this because it has the name Joker. So, but if those are the three that are going to register, I think Deadpool is going to make $1 billion. Or close to it. I think Venom's going to make what Venom movies make, and Joker, I don't know if it makes $1 billion, but it'll satisfy those people that look down on comic book movies because it's going to be presented as like this high art thing. So there is value in that as much as it pains me to say, because I think those are some pretentious bastards, and that's everything the Joker represents right now. But I don't think you get anything that's going to be like a flat out bomb or dud. And that's going to help. That's going to help. And then 2026 is like, it's showtime. It's show me time.
2025.
I mean, 2025. 2025 is show me time because that's when you get, you're going to get the three Marvel movies, Cap, Fantastic Four, and Thunderbolts, at least two of those. And you're going to get Superman from DC. If these all do well, then comic book movies are not dead. You just have to make good movies. And I think that's where we're at.
Indeed. So this is the part of our podcast where Chad turns into Jimmy Ott and keeps his blue book record and tells me of the woes, trials, and tribulations of my Oscar night, of which, because the Oscars do not put themselves on radio and do not put themselves over the air, they only put themselves over the air or through a subscription television service, I was not able to watch. I had to refresh Twitter and then watch YouTube videos. So, Chad, inform me of my death by a thousand atomic bombs.
It's not death by a thousand atomic bombs. I will rip the bandaid off and tell you exactly how you did overall. There were 23 awards, and you were correct on 12 of them. So, a
not
little
50% batting average.
Yeah, you know, a little under 50. So, I think that's pretty good.
And a couple of those were wishful thinking too, like, you know, yeah, Giamatti, like, Giamatti over Colin Murphy, you know, was clearly one of those. And I think the biggest shock of the night, as everybody would agree, was the one that you sent me the text message about, Shocker, which wasn't technically a shocker because it was a 50-50 horse race going down to the very end. But it was still kind of surprising that Killers of the Flower Moon got shut out completely and Scorsese went 0 for 10 for the fourth time in the 21st century.
You know what that means. It just means next time he's up for anything, they'll probably give it to him no matter what, because they got to make stuff up.
Well, accordingly, he's making an 80-minute Jesus movie, so we'll see.
Yeah. All right.
I don't believe that man's going to stick to an 80-minute runtime ever again.
Yeah, I'd love to see it. All right, let's go through these. We're going to start from the bottom of the ballot and work our way all the way to Best Picture. So, original screenplay, the winner was Anatomy of a Fall. You picked The Holdovers. Adapted screenplay, much to my delight, you were correct in picking American Fiction. And I couldn't judge the social media reaction if it was really an upset or not. But I was happy about it. All right. Visual effects, you picked The Renner correctly. Godzilla Minus One. For sound, you picked Oppenheimer, but the winner was Zone of Interest. I'd like to note, I said that one without seeing the movie, just because of the things that I heard. And I do think the show did a good job of showing why it won sound and the little bit of sound that they showed for the show, because it just looks like, it just looked like a big, pretty house, but you just hear all this stuff coming over the wall. So I figured that's why it got sound. Let's do a couple more. Live action short film, you got that one correct. The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar. Animated short film, you picked 95 Senses, and the winner was War is Over, the one inspired by John and Yoko. And production design, I was actually surprised by this too. You picked Barbie, and I thought that would be Barbie's second one, but it went to Poor Things.
Yeah, which this is going to be a thing that I talked about on my solo podcast, and it's something that I tweet about on the next day. We need to get to a point where when we start the following award cycle, so like the awards are typically February, March-ish, sometimes April if they're very late. The next awards cycle starts around September, around football season, with the festival circuit. I really do think we need to get to a point in time where the Academy puts out a press release and gives the official vote tallies for the previous year's awards at the beginning of the new year. Because not only is it a way to remind people of the awards and how the show went and who actually won these awards, but it's also a way to start the conversation going into the new year, the new award season year. I don't need to know who voted for who. I'm not asking for that, because that's asking for petty BS problems in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Like literal stuff that will get held over somebody's head. And that's not something anybody wants. But the transparency needs to be there. So, for example, how close was the production design category between Barbie and what did you say? One the
Poor Things.
Poor Things, which Poor Things went on a run. They had their they had their All Quests Are Quiet on the Western Front run, where they went for a good hour, where they were winning everything. How close was that race? How close was Lily Gladstone versus Emma Stone? If to the extent that there was a runner-up in the Best Picture race, who was it and by how much? Like, these things statistically matter. And if you want to dig into the archives, we're almost at 100 Oscar ceremonies now. If you want to dig into the archives and talk about the votes of people who have been dead for 40 years, cool. Nothing bad's coming to that. But like, if you're gonna let us know about the current status and what happened this year, you can do that without embarrassing people or putting people out there. You can just put the totals, because the totals at one point were on the card. So like, put the totals out there in a press release at the beginning of the new year, so that people can have a discussion about, gee, it really was a lot closer than we thought.
I agree. That's a, I never thought of that kind of thing. I think that's an interesting and actually good idea, especially when you're proposed to do like going into the next season to start drumming up some excitement over it. And I would.
Conversation. It's the same thing we do in the off season of college football. We wait until the first week of August till we get the first preseason poll, which means absolutely nothing. Half of it's completely incorrect, but it gives us something to talk about and teams to compare and those kind of things. If you put out a press release with the final statistics from the previous year's Oscars going into the next year's, it gives people an opportunity to have those same conversations we're having right now, the week after, the day after, again in September, which get them talking about you.
Right, I think that is something they should look into. But yeah, you know, I won't hold my breath with them making those kind of changes. But let's keep continue on our journey for the next five or so. All right, so original song, you picked the crowd pleasing "I'm Just Ken" that was performed to perfection by Ryan Gosling and some of the cast of Barbie. But the winner was the other song from Barbie, "What Was I Made For" by Billie Eilish.
Isn't that her second Oscar? Didn't she win for her Bond song?
We talked about this last time, and I did not actually look it up. I know that she won for that same song at the Grammys a few weeks ago. Yeah, yep, she won for "No Time to Die." So she's got two. 2 and 3 years, actually. So, you know, I mean, the song is cool, but
When everybody
again,
thinks of Barbie, they're gonna think of I'm not yet. I'm just kidding.
yeah, especially after the show, because that perform, we were watching the show, and my daughter was getting mad because all she wanted to, she just kept saying, "What are they gonna do, Ken?" I'm like, "Duh, it's gonna be the last one they do." But that's what everyone talks about coming out of that show. The performance was great. It was memorable. Everybody remembers that. I'm not going to remember this Billie Eilish song. I don't really know what it sounds like right now. But I know what "I'm Just Ken" sounds like. I've been singing it off and on for the past 3 days. So, but I get it. Songs were voted on way early, but it just seemed like that was the song that should have won. But here we go. All right, continuing on, for original score, you correctly picked Oppenheimer. Makeup and hairstyling, you correctly picked Poor Things. International feature film, duh, you correctly picked The Zone of Interest. Continuing our theory on being nominated for Best Picture and being international feature, you're going to win that one. Film editing, you correctly picked Oppenheimer. Documentary short film, you picked The Barber of Little Rock. The winner was The Last Repair Shop. And documentary feature film, you picked Four Daughters. And the winner was 20 Days in Mariupol.
Indeed. I randomly decided to look up Blame Canada because that's up there in terms of Oscar performances that I can think of where the song didn't win, but the performance blew everybody away.
I was just going to ask you, did it win? Because they yes, every when they when people talk about this Barbie performance, the song they link right up to is Blame Canada.
Which is a song from the South Park movie that no one even remembers, except for the fact that Robin Williams performed it at the Oscars. It would have been 98, so that would have been
It's
98 or
nine
99.
99. Tarzan won. You'll Be in My Heart, Phil Collins.
Phil Collins, yep. I knew it was something like that. That performance was amazing. Eilish picking up her second Oscar in 3 years is awesome. Poor Things getting costumes made sense. The makeup and hairstyling, again, I just figured there would be places and parts where they would award other things other than Oppenheimer, and I just didn't get the right ones correct.
It happens, but I mean, all in all, you did pretty damn good.
I just didn't expect Poor Things to run as far as it did, because it's a very unique film, and the fact that that thing is sitting on Disney Plus right now is bizarre to me. But like, it's a unique film, and for it to find that kind of an audience, to be what, by most counts, was probably the second place winner, beating out the holdovers, is something unique.
I'm gonna watch that movie eventually. Just gotta be a little while. All right, let's go with costume design. You picked Oppenheimer. The winner was Poor Things. Cinematography, you picked Killers of the Flower Moon. The winner was Oppenheimer. Animated feature film, correctly called The Upset of the Boy and the Heron. Actress in a supporting role. This was the lock of the night.
By the way, I very much appreciate Phil Lord coming out and being like, well, if we're gonna lose, might as well lose to the goat.
I mean, that's the way to be a gracious loser. I mean, I knew people really thought Spider-Man would win. I wanted Spider-Man to win. I thought it should have won. Well, I can't say I thought it should have won because I haven't seen Boy and the Heron, but whenever the Academy has a chance to give an award that seems justifiable to somebody that might not get too many other chances, they will take the opportunity.
Except for Mr. Williams. Mr. Williams will just die with his five Oscars instead of his six. It's fine.
Yeah, well, you they could they have given it to him? Yes. What people have said that he deserved this year, I don't really think they would have. And I think that's why he didn't get it. You got it. It has to be close enough. It has to be just close enough where it's like, ah, this is plausible. All right. But best supporting actress was won by Divine Joy Randolph for The Holdovers. Everybody knew that she was going to win, and she was the first award of the night. Actress in a leading role. You picked Lily Gladstone, and I thought that's where it was going to go. But it went to Emma Stone for Poor Things. Actor in a supporting role, the second closest thing to a lock of the night was Robert Downey Jr. winning for Oppenheimer, which you correctly picked. And actor in a leading role, you went with your heart and picked Paul Giamatti. I agree with you. I loved his performance. The winner was the obvious one, which was Cillian Murphy. And I'll hold off on these last two.
The Cillian Murphy, who will now be called upon to be Dr. Doom, and that'll be made public now because he just didn't want to sink his chances. Look, man, like Gladstone is freaking fantastic, and I was banking on the fact that she does not have an Oscar, and the fact that it's a Scorsese movie with three dynamic performances. The film had not been awarded at all over the course of the again, let me reiterate, Gangs of New York went 0 for 10. Wolf of Wall Street, 0 for. The Irishman, 0 for. Silence, 0 for. Now Killers of the Flower Moon, 0 for. Like, Scorsese is getting nominated and recognized by the Academy. But the last movie of his to actually win an Academy Award of any kind was Hugo in 2011. So, I texted Jim after the award ceremony. I was like, it's a crazy thing that, like, That dude's gonna die at some point. And the first line of his obituary will be, Martin Scorsese, Academy Award-winning director of The Departed, has passed away. And that will, like, it won't be Raging Bull, it won't be Taxi Driver, it won't be Gangs of New York, it won't be Last Temptation of the Christ, it won't be Shutter Island, it won't be any of these things. It'll be The Departed. That's just crazy to me. It's like saying, it's like Spielberg, going out and saying, the director of Schindler's List and the director of the Academy Award-winning producer of the Transformers movies has passed away. Like that's not who that dude is. Sorry. The producer of the Animaniacs has passed away. That's not how that dude's gonna get remembered. So that's what concerns me, is that like I was hoping that he'd get one the same way I was hoping De Niro would get one a few years ago for The Irishman. It's not happening. I don't know why, but I can't see him. Like, George Miller's making a Furiosa movie this year, so hopefully he gets awarded, because that man ain't staying around too much longer either. And Ridley's already gotten his multiple times. So I just, it was weird to me. And the other thing I wanted to get your opinion on, and I know we're short on time, but I wanted to get your opinion on the presentation styles, actors talking to actors. I think they could have done a better job of lining up the actors with the actors, like Universal Friends kind of thing. Like Sam Rockwell and Robert Downey Jr. go back ages. So like we know those two are like best buds. But like there are some of these where it's like, do y'all even like have the same agent? Or like, have y'all ever been in the same room? Like this very much seems like you're reading off a teleprompter.
Yeah, so watching it when the first time it happened with the supporting actress, I mean, the visual to me was cool, but I'm like, this is gonna take forever and we're gonna keep doing this. And I didn't love it, but I'm looking at social media and people that I know aren't as into movies as I am, they're all like, they really liked it. They kept saying, yeah, all of these should be done like this. So I mean, I think it's going to be,
Well, that being said, it was a fast show. We still
yeah,
got them wrapped up. It was 6 to 10. It was 6 to 10 p.m. Central Time.
they got in and out in the time they wanted to. They cut some shortcuts that I wouldn't have cut, like the whole in
Yeah, the in
memoriam thing.
memoriam thing is going to be talked about for a while. Those
Yeah.
are some stylistic choices for sure.
Right. But
But
this
the in
thing, I think.
memoriam's kind of, we kind of live in a place where the in memoriam's always controversial. Mainly because of who you choose to include and who you know.
Well, yeah, and how, like, which people do you give a whole lot of time to, which don't you? Because, like, they didn't show Harry Belafonte, who to me I thought would have got like one of those little snippets where you see him talk and stuff, but he didn't get that. He got a quick go through. But then on the other hand, they did somebody like Andre Bauer, who again is somebody I really like, and they gave him one of those little moments where they showed a little bit of a scene that he was in. So it's all a balancing act, and I approach it as you're not going to make everybody happy, but you try to do the best you can and show everybody that you know of and recognize them on that screen. But what they chose to do is to not do that, and that is the problem I have with it. Like, I don't care how long it has to take. The in memoriam takes as long as it has to take. You're going to do that one. Cut corners somewhere else.
Indeed, and I love the presentation style of every of the awards. I just wish, like again, you would have lined, if you were going to go down that route and do that something uniquely. I wish you would have paired up people that were had a legitimate history and where it made sense. Like, I'll never forget the moment that Ford Coppola, Lucas, and Spielberg came out to present Best Picture. Everybody in the world knew what that meant. That meant Scorsese was finally going to get it done. Like last year with Harrison Ford coming out to present Best Picture, everybody knowing that that pretty much meant, we were going to get this moment with Harrison Ford and he could win. because Everything Everywhere was going to win. I would have preferred if you're going to match them up that way, but still, it was a unique concept.
So, I think it hit with the people that it needed to hit with. So, we'll see more of it. If I had to guess, probably. I didn't hate it. They can do some things to work on it, but I think it was a big hit with people, particularly people that don't watch the Oscars a whole lot. So I do think we'll see more of it. All right,
Indeed.
let's get to these last two. Both of which you got right. The award for directing went to Christopher Nolan for Oppenheimer, and the best picture went to went for Oppenheimer, both of which you got correct. So you got the two big awards. And
The big ones aren't the hard ones to fill out your bracket.
it really
Like
isn't.
your one seeds are always going to advance over your 16s with very rare exceptions. Like, that's the easy part of your March Madness bracket. Like, the hard part of your March Madness bracket is, the 6-10 matchups, or the 12-15 match, the 6-12 matchups. Like, those are your 8-9s. Those are the harder to predict, and that's where your technical categories are always where you're going to slip up when it comes to a total like that. Your foreign films are going to trip you up also, because you just don't get a lot of visual of those in America. Look, man, our long national nightmare is over. Christopher Nolan can now be put into the Hall of Fame with all the other Academy Award-winning directors. We no longer have to hear how he's being shunned and shortlisted and screwed over, and how we did him dirty in 2008. We should never forgive ourselves as a nation, for we have committed this grave sin against this great cinematic master. And it's like, okay, now we're done with that. Thank you. He's in the Hall of Fame. Congratulations. Take your rightful place. But let's stop this conversation now, because I don't need to keep hearing about how, to me, Dunkirk and Interstellar not getting as much recognition as they did from the Academy is a bigger snub than The Dark Knight. Sorry, I love The Dark Knight. It's a great movie. It's a really powerful performance. And he got two really powerhouse performances from Heath Ledger and from Lockhart, Aaron, what's his name? Lockhart? Two-Face.
Aaron
Eckhart.
Eckhart.
Yeah, two dynamite performances from them, and a very underrated performance from Maggie Gyllenhaal. And, he told the best Batman story that people have enjoyed in quite a while on film. More power to him. But I think that this idea that he's been vastly underrated and browbeaten and all this for 16 years is just not, it's lunacy. It's absolute lunacy. And I'm glad that that corner of film world can now shut up, although they haven't, because since the ceremony, it's all been crazy Nolan 24/7 and talking about what he's doing next and if that'll win an award too.
Yeah, it's when you have that kind of, fandom is, short for fanatic and all that. So there's going to be a certain level of passion, but he and Snyder have like feels like cultish fans. Great, they are nowhere near the Snyder Bros. Let me be straight about that. But their devotion to Nolan is very, very high. And, to each their own. Just enjoy that your guy got the win, and kind of let's move on from that.
And like I said in my solo pod, like, the Academy doesn't get a stranglehold on the definition of best. Like, I much prefer Killers of the Flower Moon and Past Lives to Oppenheimer. The fact that Oppenheimer beat those two movies out for Best Picture of the Year doesn't lessen my enjoyment or my belief that those two films were better. I can still like those films. I can still love those films. I can still root for them. I can still go buy them on physical media. I can still follow those Carolyn Song and go spend money buying a ticket to her next movie to show support for her in her career. Like, just because it didn't win Best Picture doesn't mean it's a good movie. Like, It doesn't define being an Academy Award winning film or Academy Award winning filmmaker or Academy Award winning actor or Academy Award winning costume designer. It doesn't mean you suck at your job. It just means that you kept coming up in the your body politic, this large sector of people at that particular moment in time didn't think you were the right choice over this other performance or this other costume designer or this other director. It doesn't mean it wasn't a great film. It doesn't mean it wasn't a great performance. It doesn't mean it wasn't a great hairstyling job. It just wasn't what that small, narrow group of people wanted and felt deserved to be awarded. It doesn't change your personal belief, your personal taste, your personal love. And so, tack like the only movies that are any good are the ones that have an Academy Award in front of their name is foolhardy. And it doesn't mean by any stretch that you can't love something that doesn't have an Oscar.
Well said, man. Well said.
I mean, and the other part of it too, Chad, is, and like I told, talked to him on the podcast, and I'll wrap up with this, is like, we're in the middle of WrestleMania season. You pulled me away from watching the very first WrestleMania that I ever got to see. This WrestleMania season is about reminding ourselves, me and you, men in their close to 40, in their 40s and late 30s, why we fell in love with this shit so long ago and why we continue to love it and why we listen to The Rock cut a 26-minute promo on his Twitter feed, because we love this stuff and we enjoy it and it means something to us and it moves us. And people can laugh at it and say it's, soap opera for men or whatever. That doesn't take away from our love of it and our understanding of it. And this season, this WrestleMania season, is always about coming back to that love and coming back to that what made us fall in love with it and communally celebrating with other fandoms, other people who love this stuff just as much as you and I do about it. Like, WrestleMania is a wrestling convention. It is fans getting together and sharing their love and appreciation for this form of entertainment. The Oscars are the same way. Like, the Oscars are a reason to celebrate film and why we all love film. And yeah, there are awards given out, but it's a reason mainly for us to talk about the films of the year and why we love them and who we thought should have gotten nominated and who we thought should have won, and making our case for why they should have won or why they should have been considered. And having those debates, which ultimately bring more people to an awareness of them. More people will find Past Lives on Paramount Plus now because it was an Oscar nominee. And that's a great thing. It gets people talking. I go and I talk about Past Lives to you. You've never heard of it. You Google it, you find it, you watch it, you love it. Now and now that's how you discover things. And I think we downplay that part of what Oscar season is supposed to be.
We do. I think it's, people get into the horse race of it all, but it is a good time to discover movies and to discover different things you may like in movies. I try to keep up with Oscar movies during the year, but I never actually succeed. But the
You're an
closest I
adult male
get.
with child. You're an adult man with a child in a functioning job. I'm a dude almost in his 40s who, has a medium job and a lot of time on his hands because he has no child and no wife. So, like, my life sucks. Your life's slightly better. So you have less time to sit there and keep up to date with what is coming out at the Toronto Film Festival and what movies are going to be in Baton Rouge for a week. I need to see it at Perkins Road because I won't see him anywhere else.
So, I mean, I wouldn't say, it sucks, but it is what it is. But when Oscar time rolls around, it's the time that I have, like, they're normally in some place where I can sit down and see them. I might not be able to see them the way that I wanted to, like in the theater, but I get to see the ones that I kept track of during the year that I wanted to see. I might find some that I didn't even know about, and I might get to check them out. So that's what this should be about. It should be about, this should be the expression of love for movies and expanding what you like and what you consume in movies that you might not otherwise. And I think we get lost in that in the whole, you know, horse race of it all, which, you know,
It's the
everything
same
is
way with,
yours.
it's the same thing with the top 10 rate, the top 10 list, the or the end of the year best list. What is on my end of the year best list is going to be different from what's on your best list. And you know what? There's going to be stuff on mine that you haven't seen, and there's going to be stuff on yours that I haven't seen. And it'll intrigue me enough to go search it out and find it.
Right.
And that's how I expand my knowledge of the film.
That, and that's the way it should be, and I wish we could really get back to that.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for this week's episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. Reminder, if you want to hear this single, slightly less childless adult male talk about movies for 30 minutes nonstop with no script, please feel free to download and to listen to our previous episode, which posted on Sunday. And we look forward to getting this episode up and having you all listen and give us your feedback in regards to not only the Oscars and to our Marvel discussion, but also to wrestling and what makes wrestling great and fun as we are on the road to WrestleMania 40, 30, almost 30 years after it was in Philadelphia the last time. So for so I am, if you want to keep it, follow us on Twitter, I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
I'm at the Match Theory.
Thank you very much and have a pleasant and wonderful Mark Sanchez day.
Oh boy.